in a world which wrestles very intensely with universalism and its role in human experience and identity, certainly Parshas Korach resonates in ways that are very complex. And I imagine our generation reads Parshas Korach very differently than more hierarchical and sociologically rigid communities did 200 years ago and certainly 1,000 years ago. So it's important to read Parshas Korach in an updated fashion, but in a very mature and honest fashion. And that honesty, in truth, tends to sympathize with Korach's claim, Ki kol ha'ida kulam kidoshim uvtocham Hashem, umadua tisnasua kahal Hashem. And certainly some of the fillers that Chazal provide for Korach's concerns or the justifications for his claims that everyone stood at Har Sinai and there should be a democracy and a non-differentiation based on that common universal experience, if not universal in the humanist sense, at least universal in the national sense. And to be sure, there is a critique of Korach that Chazal amplify, that his true agenda wasn't the democratization and extension of Avodas Hashem to the common folk, but he was a demagogue with pure self-interest who cynically tried to attack and deflate Moshe's ascendant leadership and, of course, thereby torpedo or sink the entire Sefer of Bamidbar. And that's certainly an important message of Korach, but it's certainly not the only message of Parshas Korach, or else the Torah would have clearly shaded the narrative towards that message and painted Korach as this malevolent cynic whose sole purpose was egotistical. But there certainly is a story of sincerity and sincere crusading on behalf of universal extension of religious experience without a caste system and without defining roles of Kohanim or roles of religious officers. And the question is, how do we respond to that? And that question may be very pertinent to some of the modern discourse. So there's a word which the Medrash capitalizes upon. Moshe responds, Boker v'yodas Hashem es asher lo. Moshe delays till the next morning. And obviously the logistical reason or the practical reason he delays is for cooler passions to emerge and for some of the anger and irritation to perhaps fade, much in the same way that Aaron had hoped and much in the same way that good leadership is temperate and moderate and delaying important confrontations, hoping that some of the righteous indignation will yield to cooler heads. But Moshe stresses the word boker. And for Chazal, there's a message in the word boker. And this is how the Medrash interprets the message. A paraphrase, but it's an important medrash. Moshe effectively turns to Korach and says, well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu divided day and night. Vayera vahivoker, vayabdel elokim bein ha'or vein ha'choshech. Uchashem shehivdel bein ha'or vein ha'choshech, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu divided day and night, light and darkness, similarly, he divided the Jewish people from the other nations. Shenemar va'avdil eschem min ha'amim lihos li. Parshas Acharemos. Those two divisions should serve as ample precedent to justify the division of Aharon HaKohen vis-a-vis the rest of the people. Im yecholim atem la'arev osa havdala shehivdil bin or lechoshech, are you interested in confusing and obscuring the boundaries between light and darkness and day and night and the boundaries between the Jewish people and the other nations? Similarly, you shouldn't be unaccepting. You shouldn't bristle at the notion that the Kohanim are divided from the rest of the nation. L'kach amar le'boker v'yodash emes ha'shaloh v'sakadosh. So what is Moshe trying to achieve by this metaphor of, or as the overarching language of the Medrash is, gevulos sam Hashem ba'olam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gevulos chalak HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olama. So I think there are two messages. One conveyed by the day and night imagery, and one conveyed by the Jew versus Gentile imagery. Number one, divisions are fundamental and vital to the sustainability of human experience. And if there are divisions in nature that are built into human identity and human experience that bolster and frame human experience, and there are nocturnal activities, and there are daytime activities, and there are daytime hours, and there are evening hours, and when we suffer jet lag and those divisions become confused, or people who don't maintain healthy scheduling in their day-to-day schedule, and night becomes day and day becomes night, it's just unhealthy to human experience and the framework of human experience and defined roles in terms of how we interact with time are extremely, extremely necessary. And mapping that, for example, to human experience, not just how we interact with time, which is sometimes so ethereal we don't notice, but just to take as an example, many people probably listening to this year are less familiar with a Haredi structured marriage. And in a Haredi structured marriage, at least it appears to me that roles are very, very clearly defined. The domestic process is almost exclusively the responsibility of the woman, and in many cases so is earning money, and the spiritual infusion of Torah study is almost exclusive to the male. Again, these are gross generalizations, which I probably am ill-equipped to make, but it certainly appears that way. And for some people, that seems very discriminatory. But think in an open-minded fashion about how much resources are invested in less well-defined marriage, in allocating roles or in deciding roles, which oftentimes are fluid and change based on context, based on timing, based on availability. And sometimes when communication isn't healthy and that allocation of roles isn't seamless, it can lead to inner tensions. So one aspect is that human beings, as much as we preach freedom, universalism, non-differentiation, non-distinguishability, sometimes it's clearly defined frameworks, time frameworks, place, identity, interaction that bolsters and that supports healthier human activity. And that's part of Moshe's conveyance or message to Korach, that for the Mishkan to function, for the Israeli for the Jewish population to thrive, there need to be clearly defined roles, and part of that is designating and promoting officers to function particularly surrounding the Mikdash, which is a peculiar interface between human beings and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It has to be mediated by assignment of clearly tasked roles. And the second issue is, of course, the reductio ad absurdia, that you can preach universalism and equality, but it's built in that there'll be divisions, and some of those divisions are simply irremovable and unchangeable. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliver more intelligence to one person? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliver more health to one person? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliver stronger family background? Essentially, we don't live in a world of non-distinguishability. There's a comment that Dag Hammarskjöld once, the Secretary General of the UN, who was actually Swedish, he once said, "We are not permitted to choose the frame of our destiny, but what we put into it is ours." And so often we argue against the frame, or we challenge the frame, and thereby redirect attention from filling that frame, and those frames may be different with content and with meaning. So once you argue for hyper-universalism and non-distinguishability and complete equality and complete parity, then the argument seems almost pointless and futile, because differentiation is built into human identity and experience, not just in the structures we erect, such as marriage or organizations or communities, and it's necessary pragmatically, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates those differences at all levels. And that same acceptance that's necessary to, for example, as the Midrash quotes, to be able to acknowledge and embrace the difference between a Jew and a Gentile without it feeling or sounding, and those are different reactions, without it feeling personally or sounding in the way we project it, bigoted or racist. And I think that so many people, I just was speaking with someone over Shabbos, I was a speaker in a community in Israel, and a parent was relaying how much their child is struggling over this particular issue, and it's so hard for so many people to be able to synthesize nationalism and universalism and to be proud of their Jewish identity and their being selected, but being selected for universal mission and universal role to advance a national identity and to experience Judaism as a Jew with the unique manifestations of Jewishness and to perform mitzvahs and ritual, but to maintain that imaginative capacity that our ritual excellence and our Jewish experience advances universal welfare, where we're not in it just for the advance of the Jewish experience, but to the second Olam Mimalchus Shakai, by not converting people to Judaism, but by advancing human welfare, because we're selected to demonstrate a life of monotheism and morality in ways that humanity failed to appreciate for 2,500 years. So the ability to accept Jew versus non-Jew, not versus, but Jew alongside of non-Jew, should ease the ability to understand Kohen alongside of non-Kohen. And these are the messages that I think are more modern in their application that emerged from Korach. And to be able to take a few steps back and think about the source of what I would say is a tendency towards hyper-universalism in this post-modern world of rampant liberalism. And because humanity suffered so many thousands of years based on unfair and discriminatory divisions of race and religion and skin color and ethnicity and the extremely, extremely painful toll of human suffering, and ask ourselves, to what degree has society and culture and the pendulum of society and culture, to what degree has that cultural pendulum swung wildly in response as a corrective? But what are the dangers of that wild pendulum swing or that wild oscillation? And of course, the odious words, separate but equal, because it's associated with a system which employed that term in a very harsh, discriminatory, ugly, exploitative fashion, because it really wasn't separate but equal. But alternatively, if we strip that phrase from its cultural context, it's again very odious and nefarious historical and cultural context. Is that a phrase that somehow captures the ideal that humanity strives for? Of course, humanity and its human social conventions can never be perfect. We're always trying to modulate. The perfection is beyond human reach, certainly at the sociological level. Are we willing to just accept difference between gender and clearly define roles and tasks and carve out independent space in ways that may not be, certainly shouldn't be discriminatory and certainly shouldn't be in any way subjugating, but to maintain and to recognize real difference of gender and different roles that each are better equipped by divine delivery, by divine programming? And are we able to extend, not just in gender, of course, but in so many other areas, and are we able to, in a world in which sexual preferences are being reimagined, and some of that is obviously affecting the way that Jewish people view their sexuality, are we able to, on the one hand, treat people with equality and respect, but maintain a certain preference and clearly defined system of judgment and evaluation of the Torah, and without it affecting the way we treat people, but clearly creating divisions and not creating equality of sexual preference, was, God forbid, not discriminating in any way or dehumanizing all types of people. And of course, it speaks to race and it speaks to the way we view our Jewish identity. And I think it's an important balance that Korach's message challenges, and Moshe doesn't in any way defeat it, but he just points to built-in divisions and built-in roles and built-in differences, both at the cosmic level of time and day and night, which are obviously immutable to human input and influence, but even at the existential level of human identity and experience, Jew and non-Jew, is not meant to be a bigoted or racist statement. Unfortunately, many people have a hard time sensing that equilibrium, and because of that difficulty are very soured to a religion which in their mind sounds bigoted and racist. So I think it's a very important parsha for a mature reckoning, and for people, and as I'm asking myself as I record this year, to ask themselves which side of that equilibrium do they tilt towards, and to try to maybe modulate towards a greater balance. So for people who don't sufficiently appreciate the parity and the importance of non-discrimination, and who harbor certain feelings and attitudes that could lead to bigotry, hatred, exclusion, disrespect, dismissiveness, to be able to modulate themselves. And for those who, in the service of parity and morality, perhaps have swung to happy universalism that doesn't in any way recognize or acknowledge any divisions or any evaluations, to be able to maturely accept those evaluations. I'm not a Kohen. I wish I were a Kohen, but it's genetic, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided a different framework. And I'm of a certain height, and of a certain build, and of a certain cultural context, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivered a framework to me. And how much of my resources do I invest, and one could say waste, in questioning the framework or in eliminating that framework and creating a frameless reality of non-distinguishable equality, or how much do I accept my framework as being different from someone else's framework or the frame of my existence, and then try to fill that frame with as much content as I can. So it's a thing, it's an important parsha, but it's also important not to reach simplistic conclusions. I think that we do great injustice when we try to map parshios just for ideological or political purpose into our context, and we should read them from a more subtle and, I think, nuanced perspective.